Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read MRT for Thursday, June 8th, 2023. West Texas Religion on Display at Museum of the Southwest by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Not too many people come to Midland and find beauty in the city's vastness. Sure, surrounding areas dedicated to tourism provide astounding sights, and a lot of the time we claim them under the West Texas as umbrella, but the tall city specifically? Lauren Ruiz defied the odds. The proof sculpted in her Museum of the Southwest installation titled Sheol. Born and raised in Long Island, Ruiz came to the Southwest a few months ago to conduct research and contemplate what she found in this not New York oil town. Her primary interest fell to the subterranean and our relationship with the underground. However, the interpretation didn't seem as cut and dry as the world around her. Along with her curiosity about the Midland discovery, the first positive identification of partial human skeleton in the Western Hemisphere, older than the ancient Folsom culture, Ruiz found a conflicting connection between Midland's financial backbone, earth, and religion. I spent a lot of time at Monahan's Sandhills, where the Midland Mini was discovered, just lying in the sand, letting the wind bury me in a way. I was trying to get a more embodied experience, really relating to how my body relates to a space, Ruiz explained. I'm trying to call on this haunting landscape that I've experienced and question what it means to be a producing or reproducing body. An interpretation of her West Texas point of view, the installation showcases five light brown and one black, strangely shaped creations formed out of expandable foam, wire mesh, silicone, sand, and nylon stockings on pedestals. Four glass figures sit, representative of Catholic anointing chrism oil with abstracted bottoms made to look like drill bits. Ultimately, Sheol forces visitors to consider the relationship between West Texas and Earth and how drilling is our religion. Unlike our artist, Ruiz hopes every viewer comes up with their own interpretation and connecting relationship based off their background and life experiences. My work always begins with a question. As an artist, I don't see myself as someone who's providing any answers. I'm not trying to tell people what to think, Ruiz stated. I've really come to enjoy Midland. It's fascinating, driving through the landscape, seeing all the pump jacks, the new staked plains, and being enveloped in this environment. It's just so different than what I'm used to, but it's really eye-opening. I think it's really important to see other perspectives and consider those while staying true to a point of view. MISD hires new principals for Jones, Days of Allah by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland ISD board approved the hires of new principals at Jones and Days of Allah elementary schools Tuesday night during a special meeting. Tanya Duwal will be the new leader at Jones Elementary. She replaces Angie Aaron, who was named Texas Elementary School Principals and Supervisors Association's Best Elementary Principal for Region 18 this past school year. Ms. Duwal is being promoted to principal after spending the past 9 years as an elementary assistant principal, MISD reported. She brings a total of 26 years of experience, including the past 19 years with Midland ISD. David Duarte is the new principal at Days of Allah Elementary. Dr. Duarte has served as an elementary principal for the past 4 years and has also served as an elementary and secondary teacher for the past 12 years, Midland ISD reported. NWS Midland's first 100-degree day in June isn't normal, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. As far as temperatures go, it has been hard to beat this spring in Midland. During the month of May, the average temperature was 74.1 degrees, which was 1.3 degrees below normal. So far in June, the National Weather Services report an even cooler average temperature of 73.8 degrees, which is 7.8 degrees lower than the typical average for the month. High temperatures in the 80s in June, we will take it. That is about to change. The National Weather Service on its website shows summer is about to arrive with high temperatures in the mid to upper 90s, lows in the upper 60s and lower 70s, and no rain expected through Tuesday. And the NWS is reporting that the first time in 2023, a high temperature of 100 is a possibility that is expected in Midland as early as Tuesday. The hottest temperatures look to occur next week with highs of 103 plus possible for many, the NWS reported on its website Wednesday for the Permian Basin area. The National Weather Service also reports that since 2000, Midland's first 100 degree day has typically fallen around May 19th, and that the latest date for the first 100-degree day was in 2007, June 19th. Coincidentally, the first 100-degree day in 2021 was June 11th, and the first 100-degree day last year was May 7th. The NWS also reported that Midland's 100-degree day has happened after May 31st, six times since 2000. The National Weather Service is reporting very hot conditions are possible this weekend into next week. What's Up with Midland? By Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. The Blue Door, Boozy Bingo, June 17th. Centennial Park, Mextex, Family Fiesta, Saturday, Movie in the Park, Thursday, June 22nd, Music in the Park, June 30th. The Destination, Karaoke Night, Thursday, Friday Night Live, The Rick Carr Band, Friday, Stephanie Montiel, Saturday, Open Night Mic, June 15th, Friday Night Live, Roasted Crow, June 16th, Mike Donnell, June 17th, Friday Night Live, Gone By, 9, June 23rd, Case Harden, June 24th, Friday Night Live, The Day Trips, June 30th, Earth, Body and Soul, Walk-In Tarot Reading every Tuesday, June 19th, Walk-In Reiki Energy Clearing every Wednesday, Soul Doodle Drawings, Friday, Vendor Showcase Saturday, Crystal Social Gathering, June 19th, Self-Live Spell Jar Make and Take Event, June 29th, Horseshoe 3rd Annual Shale Energy Conference and Trade Show, Thursday, Desert Paws Obedience Club, Friday through Sunday, Midland Cattle Barons Ball, Saturday, Dan Cruz Classics, June 17th, Rig Zone Career Fair, June 22nd, Midland Beer Garden, Juneteenth Drag Show, June 17th, Midland College Hot Dog Run, 5K, 1 Mile, plus Pet Costume Competition, Saturday, Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market, every Saturday, Summer Sunday Lawn Concert Series, Sunday, June 18th and the 25th. Pottery Class for Adults, June 16th, Sci-Fi Friday Independence Day, June 30th, Parks Legato Farmers Market, Saturday, The Tailgate, The Great Divide, Friday, Basin Brunch, Saturday, Casey Donahue, June 17th, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Britt Floyd, June 13th, Joe Gatto's Night Comedy, June 15th, Madagascar, the Musical, June 21st, Cinema Under the Stars, Top Gun, June 25th. To put your entertainment-focused event on the calendar, send information to morgan-taylor-thomas@hearstnp.com. Three Things to Do in Midland This Weekend, June 9th to the 11th by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Listen to Legendary Tunes, a pioneer for red dirt sound. The Great Divide takes over the tailgate stage for a night of award-winning music and pure rock and roll country sounds. After 20 years of silence, the band released Providence in October 2022, hitting number one on the Texas country music charts with single Good Side. Their latest single, Infinite Line, joined the public in early March and consistently defends chart rankings. Tickets can be bought at the tailgatemidland.com, rain or shine, and 18 plus, Friday, doors at 6 p.m., 4401 North Big Spring Street. Peruse Parks Legato. The Parks Legato Farmers Market opens this weekend. The monthly event promotes interaction between West Texas farmers, bakers, artisans, and consumers. Attendees can expect everything from fresh produce and baked goods to candles and gardening tools. The market happens the second weekend of every month through October. Learn more at parkslegato.com, Saturday, 8 a.m. to noon, 7260 East Highway 191. Munch on a local brunch. Want to end or start the week on a high note? Enjoy brunch with friends and family at a local establishment. Fruity Pebble French Toast, Huevos Rancheros, Eggs Benedict, Steak and Eggs, burritos, tacos, pancakes, and more can be found at many establishments throughout the Tall City. Check out the online article for a link to our favorite brunch selections. The Great Divide takes over the tailgate stage for a night of award-winning music on Friday night. Doors open at 6 p.m. This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read MRT for Thursday, June 8th, 2023. West Texas Religion on Display at Museum of the Southwest by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Not too many people come to Midland and find beauty in the city's vastness. Sure, surrounding areas dedicated to tourism provide astounding sights, and a lot of the time we claim them under the West Texas as umbrella, but the Tall City specifically? Lauren Ruiz defied the odds. The proof sculpted in her Museum of the Southwest installation titled Sheol. Born and raised in Long Island, Ruiz came to the Southwest a few months ago to conduct research and contemplate what she found in this not New York oil town. Her primary interest fell to the subterranean and our relationship with the underground. However, the interpretation didn't seem as cut and dry as the world around her. Along with her curiosity about the Midland discovery, the first positive identification of partial human skeleton in the Western Hemisphere, older than the ancient Folsom culture, Ruiz found a conflicting connection between Midland's financial backbone, earth, and religion. I spent a lot of time at Monahan's Sandhills, where the Midland Mini was discovered, just lying in the sand, letting the wind bury me in a way. I was trying to get a more embodied experience, really relating to how my body relates to a space, Ruiz explained. I'm trying to call on this haunting landscape that I've experienced and question what it means to be a producing or reproducing body. An interpretation of her West Texas point of view, the installation showcases five light brown and one black, strangely shaped creations formed out of expandable foam, wire mesh, silicone, sand, and nylon stockings on pedestals. Four glass figures sit, representative of Catholic anointing chrism oil with abstracted bottoms made to look like drill bits. Ultimately, Sheol forces visitors to consider the relationship between West Texas and Earth and how drilling is our religion. Unlike our artist, Ruiz hopes every viewer comes up with their own interpretation and connecting relationship based off their background and life experiences. My work always begins with a question. As an artist, I don't see myself as someone who's providing any answers. I'm not trying to tell people what to think, Ruiz stated. I've really come to enjoy Midland. It's fascinating, driving through the landscape, seeing all the pump jacks, the new staked plains, and being enveloped in this environment. It's just so different than what I'm used to, but it's really eye-opening. I think it's really important to see other perspectives and consider those while staying true to a point of view.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, June 8th. City manager interviews begin June 26th. Thompson says 50 applicants narrowed down by four by consulting group. 50 people from across the nation applied to become Odessa's next city manager, and the Odessa City Council will interview the top four candidates the week of June 26. The City Council voted 5-2 on December 13th to fire City Manager Michael Marrero and City Attorney Natasha Brooks without explanation, and within hours, Mayor Javier Hoven signed a contract with T2 Professional Consulting to aid in the search for Marrero's replacement. On Tuesday, T2's Micah Lunt recapped for the council what they've done up to this point to find a new city manager, including helping the city council set benchmarks, creating a brochure, advertising the position, evaluating the candidates' written and verbal responses to questionnaires, and in a recorded video. Lent also discussed other services provided by the company, including assessing the city staff's strengths and weaknesses, addressing inefficient and ineffective processes, helping overhaul personnel policies, and providing training to directors and assistant directors. Lent told the council T2 had received 50 applications, and the council then went into executive session for a little over an hour to discuss the top candidates. After the council came back into session, they voted unanimously to continue T2's contract until August 13th for a total cost of $225,000, or $113,000 less than the original contracted amount. They also voted to set the week of June 26 aside for candidate interviews without mentioning how many. In a press conference after the meeting, Mayor Javier Hoven said, correct, when asked by the Odessa American if T2 will now apply a trimetrics assessment to the 50 candidates to whittle the list down. According to T2, the assessment explores candidates' behavioral style, personal motivators, drivers, acumen, and competencies. Hoven then said the 50 applicants had already been reduced. When asked by an OA reporter what the list had been reduced to, Hoven replied, once again, I've answered the question. Next question. City Councilman Steve Thompson, in a separate press conference, said the number of candidates had been reduced to 4 and they'd be undergoing the trimetrics assessment in advance of the interviews. T2 will do the trimetrics assessment the week of June 6th through June 11th, conduct job fit interviews June 13th through 19th, and recommend finalists June 20th, Lent said. They'll also be completing background investigations. In March, the City Council agreed the new city manager must have a conferred degree from an accredited institution of higher education at the level of a bachelor degree or higher in the field of study of public administration, business administration, management, or a related field. 3 or more years of professional experience as a city manager, assistant city manager, department head, or similar private sector related leadership role in an organization similar to the city of Odessa. Thompson and Hoven both expressed pleasure with the number of overall candidates. My concern is I wanted to get it done as quickly as possible. Number one, because we have a new calendar year, fiscal year starting October 1st. We're right in the middle of the budget process, and we need to get this person in here as quickly as we can and still do it prudently. Because this new city manager's got to put a staff together. We have to have finance people. We've got to have assistant city managers. And I'm hoping they'll promote within as much as we can. But we know we lost some people that have got to be replaced, Thompson said. Thompson said he didn't know how T2 whittled down the candidates and hasn't yet seen the remaining candidates' resumes. I don't want to see the resumes yet. That's T2's job. Now we're going to do the trimetrics, narrow it down, do the interviews, and we'll go from there, Thompson said. At the beginning of the meeting, Thompson and council member Chris Haney told Lunt none of the council members had received the series of emails Lunt said he sent out detailing T2's progress. I don't have an explanation as to why that did not happen, Lunt said, before providing documents outlining the emails. When Councilmember Denise Swanner asked if the process could be sped up, Lunt said no, as you saw from the email documentation that I provided now and have provided several weeks ago. We have been requesting confirmation and updates on this process for several weeks and have not received responses, Lunt said. Hovind's signing of the T2 contract was somewhat controversial, and part of it had to do with the fact it specifically stated T2 should send all correspondence to hovindformayor@gmail.com. In addition, Thompson and then Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith said Hovind's signing of the contract was illegal. Under Article 1-4 of the City Charter, all ordinances, resolutions, and contract documents shall, before presentation to the Council, have been reviewed as to form and legality by the City Attorney or the City Attorney's authorized representative, and shall have been examined and reviewed for administration by the City Manager or the City Manager's authorized representative. In addition, under City Charter Section 30, City Council approval or contracts must occur under certain circumstances. Continuation of City Manager Interview Article. One being contracts requiring the appropriation of funds. Bernal did not sign the contract, and then Interim City Attorney Dan Jones initialed it on December 16th, 2 days after T2 received a $50,000 initial payment. Jones has since been named City Attorney. The mayor has repeatedly said the T2 contract is open-ended. The price tag is up to $338,000 and can be terminated with 30 days' notice. However, the contract itself does not give the length of the contract, nor does it place a limit on the contract amount. Instead, it states, City shall pay professional for services actually performed a monthly set fee of $24,000 for an annual base professional fee of $288,000. Payment 1 is due at the time of the execution of this agreement shall be a fee of $50,000. Smith, who was fired March 1st, has actually filed a whistleblower lawsuit against the city alleging he was fired because he asked the Texas Attorney's General's Office, Texas Rangers, and Ector County District Attorney's Office to investigate Hovind over the T2 contract and the City Council over Brooks's and Marrero's termination. He believes they violated the Open Meetings Act when they fired the pair December 13th because the public wasn't allowed to speak until after the vote. In fact, the Council held another meeting January 9th, during which Council members again voted to fire the pair after allowing the public to speak. Moving up, New Ireland Principal Distress Reading by Ruth Campbell. Mercedes Seed Shirley will soon take on her first principal assignment at Ireland Elementary School. Currently the assistant principal at Blackshear Elementary, Shirley started with Ector County ISD in 2006, serving in a variety of roles from teaching to assistant principal. She taught in New Braunfels for 6 years before returning to ECISD. I'm really excited for the next step. It's kind of been my focus for the last few years to get back into administration, and this is where I wanted to land as administration was in a principal role, Shirley said. The Odessa native said she is happy about working with teachers that she went to school with and some that worked with her mother-in-law, Julie Shirley, for years. It's a very comfortable place to be, and I'm really excited to pick up where Mr. Ortiz, the current principal, has left off. They've brought that campus up to a B, and we're going to try to raise it to an A for this next year. It's in a good position, Shirley said. She added that she is trying to fill some teacher openings, but we've got a really good solid base of a staff, so I think we'll be ready to hit the ground running, Shirley said. Noe Ortiz, the current principal at Ireland, is moving to become principal of Crockett Middle School, which will be transitioning to a middle school year's international baccalaureate program. The goal for Ireland is to create an environment that is comfortable and happy for all of my teachers and students. I want to integrate a culture of reading on my campus. We've really talked about this a lot. I want to engage with some authors to do some visits. I really want to unite my campus in the special areas like PE, library, and our STEM, and connect them, she said. If they are working on poetry in fourth grade, she wants to see it not only offered in the library, but also in the classroom and at PE and music. Shirley said she is a big proponent of Donna Lynn Miller and her book, The Book Whisperer, awakening the inner reader in every child and giving students solid, sheltered time for independent reading. I want to see books in kids' hands. It's very important, and I think sometimes we lose sight of that because they have their devices in their hands all of the time. I believe in blended learning. We need both. But I do want to see books in kids' hands, Shirley said. All ECISD campuses have some blended learning. According to the Learning A to Z website, blended learning is an educational methodology that blends online or digital components with face-to-face instruction. Including technology in education helps set students up for success later in life. All of the kids have a one-to-one device, so they have access either to an iPad or a Chromebook, she added. Born and raised in Odessa, Shirley earned a bachelor's degree in history and political science from University of Texas Permian Basin. Angie has post-baccalaureate certification in special education, kindergarten through 12, general education, early childhood through fourth grade, general education, 4th through 8th grade, and a principal certification, kindergarten through 12th grade, from the Texas Education Agency. She was excited to get the principal assignment to Ireland. I applied for and got to join a group of 5 other administrators this year in an aspiring principal academy. The director of leadership led us, and we have met once a month all year this year. That has really helped me prepare for the position, but it has also given me some connection with other aspiring leaders in that same group, Shirley said. When I was asked to apply for the job, I wasn't really planning on it. This was going to come in the next few years, and when I was asked to apply for a couple of jobs, I was a little hesitant, but I thought I'll go through the interview process. But when I sat down with my Ireland crew for the interview, it was just so comfortable, and it was just really exciting. I think we all kind of felt like, yes, this is a good fit, so that was really energizing. After the interview, I thought, okay, yeah, this could be my spot right here. You know you can feel it when you talk to a group, Shirley added. She said she also feels like she has a support network from fellow principals and Principal Valerie Rivera. Ms. Rivera has been a mentor to me since my early teaching days. She has been so helpful and really let me step in and take a lot of administrative duties that a lot of APs don't get to do. We've worked really well together, and I really have a lot of respect and reverence for her, for what she's done, and how she's grown me as an administrator, Shirley said. Rivera said the quote, "A great person is the person who makes every person feel great," best describes Shirley. She is one that always walks into a room with a smile, greets everyone personally, makes them feel great and noticed. She is great with kids, always hugs on them, and praises them. She knows how to motivate kids, people, and get them to put effort into their work and goals. She is a great motivator for all, Rivera added. Shirley didn't intend to go into education until she was at the end of her college career. My last year I went and finished up and then went to Region 18 Education Service Center to do my teaching certificate. Then I was at Dowling for 4 years as a special ed teacher, then moved into Gen Ed, general education. In 2011, I decided to go back and get my master's degree. I finished that in 2012, she said. Her master's degree, also from UTPB, is in education leadership. Shirley has other educators in her family. Her mother-in-law taught in the district for 30 years and spent 17 of those years at Ireland. Her sister-in-law is a fourth grade teacher at LBJ Elementary School. This was Shirley's first year at Blackshear, but she has worked with Principal Valerie Rivera previously. Shirley was glad to come back to Odessa. She and her husband, Dossie, have two sons and two grandchildren. My sons are 26 and 23. They both moved when we moved to New Braunfels. They were there for a few years, and my youngest finished up high school, and they both decided to move back here because of the oil field. They could make better money, so they both moved back here, which meant my husband and I quickly moved back, especially when we found we were having grandbabies. We had two beautiful grandbabies this year. I have a granddaughter that's 6 months and a grandson that is 4 months old. We were very happy to come home, Shirley said. Her father, Sam Gonzalez, has lived here his whole life, and her mom, Jill, moved here after she married Sam. My family has been here for generations. My husband's family has also been here for generations. The Shirley family, so both of our families, are pretty rooted here in West Texas, Shirley added. Russia's oil business challenged. Oil field maintenance, American LNG exports ramp up pressure, by Bob Campbell. Laboring under the weight of the Ukraine war, the Russian energy industry has become dependent on China and India, and it's scrambling to make more liquefied natural gas because American LNG exports are crippling it. Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards, Waco economist Ray Perryman, and 2023 Permian Basin International Oil Show President Larry Richards say Russia's natural gas pipeline to Europe are the main thing propping up the nation's economy. The European boycott of Russian oil exports has had little effect, in my opinion, Edward said. When you see countries like China and India continue to take the Russian oil because it is priced somewhat cheaper, that circumvents any effect of boycott. Natural gas exports have been reduced, and Russia is desperately trying to get more LNG capabilities going so that they can ship that commodity to countries like China and India in the future. Edwards said Russia's big long-term challenge is the quality and maintenance of its existing oil and gas fields. Many American and European companies are uniquely qualified to keep those fields up and going. Companies like Schlumberger and Halliburton, which have now pulled out, he said. Big companies like Shell, BP, and Exxon have written off investments there. That is where Russia will truly be hurt, not today, but in future years, as there will be a big drop-off in production from those same fields because of underinvestment and lack of routine maintenance. Edwards cited similar trends in Argentina and Colombia, where shoddy maintenance has severely cut production. Perryman said Russia's energy industry is about the only thing keeping the wheels on their economy. Even though many countries are boycotting Russian oil, China and India, among others, are taking advantage of the price discounts and purchasing the crude, Perryman said. Boycotts and embargoes are not particularly efficient ways to impact commodity flows. As a member of OPEC Plus, Russia has also recently agreed to voluntarily reduce production in response to the group's attempts to reduce global supply and therefore raise prices. Perryman said the other big factor is that the pipeline system in Europe virtually compels much of the region to rely on Russia for natural gas. This dependence is the true source of Russia's geopolitical power, he said. Its global influence could be greatly limited by American efforts to increase domestic LNG production and exports in Europe. All aspects of the Russian industrial complex are challenged by the war, and the global response to it has limited its economic capacity. In addition, some buyers of Russian oil and natural gas have been pursuing alternatives. Thus, even if the war ends, it's unclear that the market for Russian oil will return to former levels. Perryman said China and India, with large populations and developing economies with expanding energy needs, will likely provide a meaningful market for Russian energy, although at lower prices and margins, irrespective of what Europe and other areas ultimately decide. Russia's reserves are vast, and keeping the energy sector viable is crucial to the country's sustainability, he said. The economy is virtually entirely dependent on it. For the foreseeable future, selling at discounts and maintaining OPEC plus relationships are likely to continue. The most disruptive action to erode Russian influence over time is a concerted global effort to enhance LNG production and exports to Europe. Richards said the world's sanctions on Russia hit their oil and gas industry in ways most people aren't aware of. The Permian Basin is the birthplace of innovation for the onshore oil and gas industry, and it can be seen in the Russian oil field, he said. While at a tank battery in one of Russia's oldest oil fields years ago, I was amazed to see nameplates on equipment, not only in English, but from companies I knew well. The sophisticated production equipment on their site was built in Odessa by civils, and the vapor recovery units pulling methane from their tank had been built by UMC in Andrews. The same held true a few years later, when I toured one of Russia's largest natural gas compressor stations, which supplied winter gas to much of Moscow. The major equipment was from across the globe, and the critical compressors, turbines, and electric often bore European or American labels. Richard said that has been the case last fall when Russia's Nord Stream pipeline was almost shut down because of Russia's inability to retrieve a German-made Siemens turbine that was sitting in a repair facility in Canada undergoing routine maintenance. In addition to U.S. manufacturers, much of Russia's more sophisticated oil field equipment is built in Canada, Germany, and Italy, making trade sanctions bite with serious field implications to keep that equipment running and maintained, he said. The safety valve for Russian producers is probably the Chinese, whose factories now manufacture many of the critical repair parts and components for this equipment. Richard said oil revenues historically represent 30 to 35% of the total Russian budget, but its oil and natural gas revenues fell by over 30% in May and by 43% year over year in the first quarter of 2023. Western sanctions from the G7 summit last year placed a cap at $60 a barrel on Russian crude, he said. Russia tried to make up the difference with higher production volumes, but recently ran afoul of Saudi Arabia, the only producer with higher monthly exports than Russia, slapping their hand for breaking OPEC quotas. Russia's ace in the hole, their natural gas sales in Europe, have also failed to save their revenue line. The combination of a mild winter, increased LNG exports from the U.S., and an impressive move by Norway to transform their natural gas production ratio has left Russia a secondary provider selling natural gas well below market. Richards said Russia's huge drop in oil and gas revenues is impacting its overall economy. According to the Russian Finance Ministry, budget proceeds from oil and gas taxes fell 36% from last year, he said. Estimates for Russia's growth rate in GDP have fallen from 4% to 1%, basically a maintenance level. With inflation rates running nearly 11%, the Russian government will find it harder to maintain increased military spending while providing all the subsidies and social spending that has kept it in power. Richard said China is the main beneficiary. China sells Western-designed equipment and spare parts from its factories at a price premium to Russia, stockpiles Russian crude at prices even below the $60 price cap, and uses its geopolitical leverage to place its interest above both Russia's and the United States in the developing world, he said. Quick Hits Fire History. Get your copy of the Odessa Fire Department history book that covers 1927 to 2011. The 533-page book is available in hardcover for $71.35 and paperback for $63.60. The book was created by retired OFR firefighter John Taylor and covers the beginning of the department with volunteer firefighters from 1927 to 1939. In 1939, the first paid firefighter began working alongside volunteer firefighters until 1945. In 1945, Odessa Fire Department became a full-time paid department. The book follows the Odessa firefighters to March 31st, 2011. The book contains newspaper articles and photos. Visit ofdhistory.org to order the book. It is also on Amazon. Farmers Market. The Parks Legato Farmers Market opens this Saturday from 8 a.m. to noon at Parks Legato off Highway 191. The market features a variety of vendors, live music, food trucks, games, and more. Text PLFM to 432-498-0251 to receive the latest updates on this year's Farmers Market events. Odessa's Got Talent 2023. Permian Basin Mission Center will present Odessa's Got Talent at 7:30 p.m. June 17th at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Watch the best of the best compete live in front of a panel of distinguished judges for more than $8,000 in cash prizes. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/4FNHJZ77. Hot Dog Run. The Midland Humane Coalition has scheduled a hot dog run at 7:30 a.m. June 10th at Midland College, 3600 North Garfield Street. Dogs and their humans are invited to run a 5K or 1 mile race. Tickets start at $25. Carlsbad 4th. Carlsbad, New Mexico is celebrating the 4th of July in a big way with a variety of events starting at 2:30 p.m. July 1st and ending July 4th with a fireworks show and Grupo Veneno's music. Visit carlsbadchamber.com for a full schedule of events. Fan Drive. Odessa Salvation Army needs your help to provide fans to low-income Odessans. Donate to Westlake Hardware or online at westlakehardware.com/fan-drive. Movies in the Park. Last Friday's Movies in the Park was canceled due to weather, but this week's continues with Puss in Boots: The Last Wish at Optimist Park. Bring your own lawn chair, blankets, and watch a free movie with the City of Odessa. Obituary for June 8th, John C. Middaw, 73 of Midland, passed away in the early morning hours of Monday, May 29th, after battling a long illness. He was born on January 9th, 1950, to the late Roger and Jean Middaw in Lockport, New York. Those left to cherish his memory are his daughter, Corey, grandchildren, Sarah, Alyssa, Emily, and Jake, lifelong friend, Larry, and adopted daughters, Summer and Bianca. Cremation services are under the direction of House of Angels Funeral Home. Please continue to celebrate the life of John Medaw by visiting our website at houseofangelsfh.com. Obituary for June 8th, Della Mae Smeltzer Baker. Della Smeltzer Baker was born February 4th, 1928 in Bayard, Texas, and died June 2nd, 1923 in Arlington, Texas. Her parents were Pastor Nelson H. and Jewel Blanton Smeltzer. She is preceded in death by her twin sister Stella, her sister Onita, and her twin Juanita, as well as her parents and by her husband of 60 years, D.O. Baker. Della is survived by her children, Jeannie Kramer and husband Daryl, Esther Davis and husband Terry, Wendy Baker and Olin Dale Baker and wife LaDonna. She has 9 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by her sister, Grace Lehman, her brother-in-law, Dale Baker, and many nieces and nephews. Della's family would like to offer sincere gratitude to Tracy Ray Toyin and the staff at Woodside Place Assisted Living and to Heat and Heart Hospice for all the care and support they had given her through this time. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. June 7th at the Highland United Methodist Church in Odessa with Reverend John Hendricks and Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Graveside service followed at Sunset Cemetery in Odessa. Obituary June 8th, Alice Laverne Horrell Grenier. Born on December 21, 1950 in Odessa, Alice touched countless lives with her infectious spirit. She was devoted to her husband David Grenier for 54 years and had children and grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held on June 16th at 6 p.m. at 218 Neal Street, Odessa. Death notices for June 8th. Stephen Robert Steve Hopkins, 77, of Midland, died Tuesday, June 6th in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, June 10th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Rhonda Gay Jackson, 65, of Midland, died Friday, June 2nd in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. June 8th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Pastor Dennis Dennis is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jimmy Don Lamar, 66, of Odessa, died Monday, May 1st in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. June 10th at Sherwood Church of Christ. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home of Odessa. Edna Sid Earl Webb, 94, of Odessa, died Friday, June 2nd in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. June 7th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Gonzalez hearing set for September. Death row inmate Michael Dean Spider Gonzalez made a short appearance in Ector County District Court Tuesday to discuss an upcoming evidentiary hearing he hopes will ultimately save his life. Gonzalez's attorney, Richard Burr, provided Judge John Schrode of the 161st District Court a summary of what he intends to prove during a hearing by the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals, and Travis Sprague, who represents the state, offered brief counterpoints. Schrode said he intends to schedule a week-long hearing for the end of September. Gonzalez, 49, is on death row for stabbing Manuel and Merced Aguirre to death during a robbery at their home in April 1994. He had been scheduled to be executed in March 2022, but the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals granted Gonzalez a stay. Burr contends Gonzalez's IQ doesn't meet the legal threshold required for execution. The United States does not allow people with IQs 70 or below to be executed if they're also unable to handle life's demands and if there was evidence of issues before the age of 19. On Tuesday, Schrode agreed to allow Burr to call expert and lay witnesses to the stand in September to testify about Gonzalez's IQ. The lay witnesses are the only ones who can testify about Gonzalez's adaptive behavior or skills he used to meet the demands of everyday living. Burr also contends prosecutors hid things about now retired Odessa Police Department detective Robert Snow Robertson, the lead detective on the case. The defense attorney told Schrode Tuesday that Robertson had a reputation for cutting corners, abusing witnesses, falsifying confessions, and covering his tracks. Burr believes Robertson had a hand in the confession Gonzalez made to a detention officer. In addition, Burr said Robertson testified he was absolutely sure a substance found on a camper in between Gonzalez's house and the Aguirre's house was blood, but his case notes indicated he wasn't sure. In addition, Burr said Robertson testified an expert witness from A&M said peppers found in the victim's home and Gonzalez's home were rare, but case notes don't reflect anything of the sort. If jurors had known these things about Robertson, it could have shifted their picture of the case and cast doubt on other evidence, Burr said. Bragg said Robertson testified the stain could be blood, and he also testified it would be best left to an expert to determine if the peppers were rare for Texas. He also noted the case notes Burr referred to regarding the peppers was written by an employee of the district attorney's office and is therefore inadmissible because it is hearsay within hearsay. Moreover, Bragg said Gonzalez's original defense attorney knew about the A&M expert and could easily have called him to testify at the trial. As far as Robertson's reputation, Bragg said, some of the records were available at the time of the trial and could have been used then to impeach the detective. Some of the other records weren't available but are inadmissible anyway, he said. For example, Bragg said the courts have ruled civil lawsuits and allegations cited in the appellate briefs of other defendants can't be used to commit character assassination. Bragg argued the evidence Burr wanted to present can't overcome Gonzalez's confession to the crime or the fact items stolen from the Aguirre's were linked to him. On April 22, 1994, Manuel Aguirre Jr. found his 73-year-old father and his 65-year-old mother stabbed to death in their home in South Odessa. Manuel Sr., who was recovering from quintuple bypass surgery, was found in his easy chair suffering from 11 stab wounds. Merced Aguirre was found in the kitchen suffering from so many wounds. A medical examiner was unable to specify the number. Gonzalez immediately became a suspect because he was Aguirre's next-door neighbor, and the Aguirre suspected him of earlier break-ins. They expressed fear of the known gang leader. Gonzalez and three members of his gang were questioned by police, and Gonzalez was arrested on May 7, 1994. Authorities have items stolen from the Aguirre's home were found in the possession of several people who said they'd bought them from Gonzalez and his fingerprints were found on them. The jury convicted Gonzalez, who earned his nickname due to two spider tattoos, in December 1995. His conviction was upheld and he was resentenced to death in 2009 after his sentence was overturned. Differences in sex development. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 78-year-old man. Yesterday, I read that I am considered intersex because urine does not come out of the end of my penis, but rather under the penis shaft. This does not surprise me much, but I am really curious about it. I want to see a psychiatrist just to talk about it. What do you think, Anonymous? Answer. Hypospadia is a common condition where the urethral meatus, the opening where urine comes out, is on the underside of the penis. About 1 male per 200 has this condition. There are many, many DSDs, or differences in sex development. The term intersex is no longer used in medical literature, but some people with DSDs choose to describe themselves that way, which are conditions people are born with in the genitourinary system and reproductive systems that sometimes affect sex determination and differentiation. The term used in this field are changing, as is the understanding of the complex biology. It is not as simple as many think that a person's chromosomes determine their sex. Some of these born with hypospadias have other conditions that are commonly thought of in the large group of DSDs, but most cases do not have other differences in their genitourinary and reproductive anatomy. A common and usually relatively minor difference in sex development does not have to change your identity. I am in favor of talking to a psychiatrist, therapist, or other mental health professional to discuss your concerns, questions about the function of the penis, whether urination or sexual, should be presented to a urologist.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.